Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends across the public media spectrum here in region, bringing you the latest headlines of the day. I'm Carl Lengel. It is the 13th of February, a Friday, 2026. Federal environmental regulators on Thursday repealed the bedrock finding that climate change endangers human health. Montana Public Radio's Ellis Julin has more on what that change means for Montanans.
On Thursday, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency repealed the endangerment finding. Originally passed in 2009, it established that climate pollution threatens public health and welfare. It authorized the EPA to regulate planet warming emissions as part of the Clean Air Act and to limit greenhouse gas emissions from cars and trucks. Thursday's rollback is the Trump administration's most significant policy change undermining climate initiatives. The head of the EPA touted the rollback as deregulation that will save Americans money. Katrina Mullen, an environmental economist at the University of Montana, disagrees.
In the case of the Clean Air Act, there's been studies done, in fact, by the EPA that suggested that the benefits of those environmental regulations were 30 times higher than the cost of those regulations.
She says the repeal will worsen climate change and Montanans will be economically affected. Worsening wildfire seasons, prolonged drought, and warmer temperatures all negatively impact the state's outdoor recreation, agriculture, and tourism industries. Dr. John Balmes researches climate impacts on human health at the University of California, San Francisco. He says the biggest health impact of burning more fossil fuels is increased air pollution.
PM2.5 is the major contributor to the global burden of disease due to air pollution.
PM2.5 are microscopic particles in the air that go into the bloodstream. The particles are also found in wildfire smoke.
It also affects respiratory disease. It affects diabetes, premature births, and low birth weight.
Death tolls from heat waves, floods, and other extreme weather events will also increase in a warming world. With this federal policy repealed, state governments could be responsible for climate regulation. Montana has one of the strongest constitutional environmental protections in the country, and it includes the right to a stable climate. In Missoula, I'm Ellis Julin.
Aaron Bolton contributed to this reporting. A former Montana Solicitor General has been nominated to become one of the state's three federal judges. President Donald Trump announced on social media that he's tapping attorney Katie Lane for an open U.S. District Court bench in Montana. Lane was a deputy solicitor general under Attorney General Austin Knutson from 2021 to 2023. Most recently, she worked as counsel for the Republican National Committee. If her nomination is confirmed by the U.S. Senate, Lane will replace Judge Susan Waters, who presides over the federal court in Billings. Waters announced semi-retirement starting in June 2026. Montana Republican U.S. Senator Steve Daines and Tim Sheehy celebrated the nomination and said they'll work to get Lane confirmed. More than 500 Cisco drivers and warehouse workers in Montana and Chicago, jointly represented by five Teamsters locals, have voted by a 99.5% margin to authorize a strike. The workers are demanding wage increases, stronger benefits, and improved working conditions that meet or exceed the standards already set by thousands of Teamsters across the company. Cisco is one of the largest and most profitable food service providers in the U.S. In 2025, the company posted net profits of nearly $2 billion. Cisco Teamsters in Chicago and Montana are demanding a contract that reflects their critical role in the company's success and Cisco's strong financial position. Sean Krebs is a member of Montana Teamster Local 190 and a warehouse worker. He says, "We're asking for a fair and reasonable contract that reflects the massive profits this company generates every year because of our labor." Over the past year, Cisco Teamsters have secured a series of strong agreements, including the first ever regional contract ratified in December. A survey in Montana's most populous county shows a need for more resources around mental health, exercise, and substance use. Yellowstone Public Radio's Kayla DeRoche reports.
Public health and medical centers in Yellowstone County published the Community Health Needs Assessment this month. The community health group, Healthy by Design, helps facilitate a survey every 3 years. Amanda Zimmerman-Murter with Healthy by Design says the data and community-level responses collected in the assessment then inform a countywide health improvement plan.
The social drivers of health, physical activity, nutrition, weight, mental health, and substance use were all ranked highly, both in severity and our ability to impact together.
Results show Yellowstone County and the state exceed the national average in deaths linked to alcohol. Suicide mortality in Yellowstone County is a little below the statewide average, which is double that of the national average. And the rate of depression in the county tops both the statewide and nationwide numbers. Zimmerman-Murter says members of the medical sector will meet over the next few months to pinpoint strategies for acting on the priorities the assessment identifies. In Billings, I'm Kayla Drosch.
February is American Heart Month, and a heart transplant recipient wants to spread awareness of a critically misunderstood condition. Laura Hatch of Big Sky Connection reports.
Lisa Solberg founded the Hypertrophic Cardiomyopathy Association, a nonprofit that supports and educates the community about the disorder. Hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, or HCM, causes the walls of the heart to thicken, leading to heart stiffness and less room for blood to fill it. The heart has to work harder to pump blood, causing symptoms such as fatigue, a fast heartbeat, or chest pain. Solberg says only 15 to 20% of people with HCM in the U.S. know they have it.
They might think they have athletically induced asthma. They might have been told they just have an innocent heart murmur. They might just think they're short of breath because they're getting older, or that palpitation was a little too much caffeine.
Solberg estimates HCM affects anywhere from 1 in 200 to 1 in 500 people, and is genetic. She encourages people to look back at their family tree to find cardiac diagnoses or symptoms that might have been HCM. That can help you and your family members know if you should be tested. Nearly 9% of people in Montana have been diagnosed with some kind of heart condition. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Solberg started her nonprofit 30 years ago when her sister died unexpectedly from HCM. Solberg herself was diagnosed with it when she was 12, and now she's celebrating the 9th anniversary of her heart transplant. Residents of Park County, Montana have a chance next week to check out local community service organizations and what they provide. It's called Park County RAD, RAD, or Resource Access Day, and it's Tuesday, February 17th from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. at the Livingston Park County Public Library. The event is sponsored by the Park City County Health Department. A news release from Park County says staff from community service organizations like HRDC, WIC, the Early Childhood Coalition, Livingston Food Resource Center, and Loaves and Fishes, a nonprofit food kitchen, will be there to explain their work and offer assistance. Landowners in the state can now apply for 2026 hunting access programs through Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. Programs allow landowners to provide hunting access on their property or to allow travel corridors to public hunting areas. FWP will help interested property owners tailor access rules to align with their personal needs and will provide compensation in some cases. Applications for access corridors are due by March 15th. Programs that allow for hunting on private land are due in early summer. For more information, check out landowner programs at fwp.mt.gov. Montana Shakespeare in the Parks invites the community to attend a free performance of the spring Montana Shakes program, Good in Everything, an original play based on As You Like It and directed by Matt Foss. According to MSIP's website, Good in Everything is a comical and high-octane adventure of two best friends, Rosalind and Celia. Created for grades K through 6, families are encouraged to share this live theatrical experience. The Bozeman performance takes place at 1 o'clock at Christus Collegium on 8th Avenue in Bozeman. Doors open at 12:45. Seating is first come, first serve. The performance is 45 minutes long. It'll be followed by a post-show talkback with the actors. For more information, visit shakespeareintheparks.org. The 22nd Big Sky Documentary Film Festival is underway in Missoula. The annual event celebrates nonfiction films and creators from around the world, including right here in Montana. Montana Public Radio's Austin Amistoy sat down with the filmmakers behind Big Sky Falling.
In the mid-2000s, the murder of 26-year-old Jason Wright and subsequent bust of a cocaine ring rocked the community of Bozeman. Investigators connected a web of current and former Montana State University student-athletes connected to the killing and drug dealing. The fallout shook the foundations of the school and raised questions about its ability to support the student-athletes it recruited.
We are young men trying to find our way through life in Montana. And for a murder involving cocaine and drugs like that, that was really a shock.
Joining me today to talk about their film, Big Sky Falling, are directors Scott Diener and Mark James. Scott, Mark, hello.
Austin, thanks again.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about what drew you to document this tumultuous period at Montana State, Scott.
I remembered this story from a Sports Illustrated article and ultimately set out to see why nothing had ever been done in terms of understanding the scope and how everything transpired during that period. Basically, just tried to find anyone involved in the story that was willing to talk about it, and spent pretty much a year doing nothing but emailing and calling people until I was able to track a few down.
Your year of emailing obviously paid off. You guys managed to interview John Labrum and Brandon Miller, the two men convicted for their roles in Jason Wright's killing, and several others convicted on cocaine charges. We also hear from their mentors, former professors, family members, coaches. The access on display in this documentary is pretty incredible. And I'm wondering what it took to secure that kind of access and get those kind of voices in this story.
I think a lot of credit goes to Scott, because his persistence, I mean, he's being a little humble, like years of persistence on all fronts to get all these people on all sides, the detectives, the men who are in prison, the people who are out, and everyone else. I mean, that took a lot of effort, time, patience, and that's just like a massive credit that we have all those people, because that really is just Scott staying on it and being passionate about it. And, you know, the result is the fact that we get to show all these people now.
I want to switch gears to another central part of the film. Toward the end, we hear about this review of Montana State Athletics program and their recruiting practices after this scandal. And this review found that the school wasn't properly supporting its student athletes. And the film really does explore what it's like for young Black men in particular to come to a place like Montana with a primarily white population and experience this like colossal culture shock and racism in some instances. So what were some of your biggest takeaways about this aspect of the story? You obviously determined that it was really important to feature it.
I think something that was super important to Scott and I was we really didn't want to take a stand, a position about who was at fault, who was wrong. Obviously, terrible things happen and crimes are committed. But we wanted to show each character sort of as they are, as a human, and how they got there. And the way that these athletes ended up in this position was, of course, bad decisions that they themselves admit, but also the support system that brought them there and then didn't ultimately support them. And so I think to have the full context of the story, we needed a little bit of that backstory about, you know, what happened when those athletes arrived.
I guess I'd close by asking you if there's anything you want audiences to really be watching for this weekend when they come to see this film premiere.
There are people that remember this story that we spoke to off camera in Bozeman, that they have one view of it, because they lived it and they were there during that time and they watched the news coverage and they read the newspaper and they talked to people on the street about their opinions of it. So whether or not those were the right opinions, that's what they felt at the time. So more than anything, I would hope that whether you know the story or have never heard the story, you just walk away from it understanding where John, where Brandon, where Demetrius came from, and ultimately, what were the surrounding factors that led to them all choosing what they chose and who they became at the worst moments of their life?
Yeah, I think I'd just add, you know, Brandon and John both sort of view that night as the worst night of their life. And obviously for Jason, who lost his life, one terrible night, one terrible incident can change your whole life. And something like that could be stopped in a whole series of dominoes that led up to that.
Filmmakers Scott Diener and Mark James discussing their new documentary, Big Sky Falling. The film premieres at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival on Sunday, February 15th at 2:30 p.m. at the Wilma in Missoula. Scott, Mark, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
The Big Sky Documentary Film Festival is a sponsor of MTPR, but the news coverage of the event is editorially independent. That's The Worm for this Friday, the 13th. Catch up with us tomorrow morning. We'll have another episode on The Weekend Worm, and have a great holiday. The Daily Worm comes back on Tuesday.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.